All right, I'm going to get this started. My name is Julie Cederbaum, and I'm actually the secretary for the Public Health Social Work section and the moderator for this session, as well as the first presenter. So I have a colleague of mine timing me while I'm up here, but I want to welcome you all and thank you for joining us for this session today, put on by the Public Health Social Work section with a focus on mental health. Today we will be taking questions after each presentation. I recognize that sometimes you're trying to juggle seeing multiple presentations you want to see in the same session time, so we'll do it that way. But know that all of us will be here the whole time, and so if you have questions or you want to talk to us individually at the end, we're happy to do so. Is everybody ready? Is it 10:30 on day two? Or like, it's not Wednesday. No. It's already, come on, you're awake. You guys have your coffee this morning. All right. So I'm going to be speaking about social support and dyadic functioning among individuals who are military connected, and this was during the post-deployment reintegration period. This is part of a larger study that was put on by, or kind of funded by, the California Community Endowment. And the original, or the main purpose of the study, was actually to look at sexual dysfunction and the way that sexual dysfunction impacted relationships. This project is situated within USC, which is Southern California School of Social Work, Center for Innovation and Research on Veterans and Military Families. So if you want more information about that project, happy to give it to you. So a couple of things, I just wanted to ground us a little bit. I know that I'm speaking as the moderator and the presenter all at the same time. The four topics today, the link is mental health. So as you think about all of us and you're thinking about kind of how this session works together, we're all looking at different aspects of mental health. And so I'm situating you within a military context right now. So we know that people returning post-deployment report, particularly those who have experienced combat. See, I already lost one. Report higher rates of anxiety, anxiety, depression, and PTSD. I've taught for a long time, I don't take it personally. We also know that combat exposure specifically increases all of this, right? So everybody that experiences deployment has higher rates of, or not everybody, but that was a terrible thing to say. I'm going to reframe that and say most people cope successfully. When people have experienced deployments, they are more likely than those that have not been deployed or their civilian counterparts to experience anxiety, depression, and PTSD, and that's then increased by combat exposure. But I do want to highlight resilience first, because a majority of people, a good number of people, do fine. So we also know that in general, social support is protective. This is just across contexts. Social support is good for all of us. We know that for service members, support can be either formal, so folks like military leadership or people within your battalion, or informal. We also know that among this population specifically, that less social support is associated with PTSD, depressive symptoms, and decreased psychosocial functioning. We also know that your partner relationship matters. So for service members, dyadic functioning, so how well your relationship is working, how satisfied you are in your relationship, influences mental health. So particularly that when people have better dyadic functioning, so when their personal relationships are working better, that is protective against adverse outcomes. So people are doing better on the whole. What we didn't know, and so why we undertook this work, was to understand whether social support, whether there was a positive association between social support and dyadic functioning. So we kind of know social support matters, we know dyadic functioning matters, but we hadn't looked at it together. And so the purpose of the analyses or the work was to consider the mechanisms through which social support from family members, peers, and we broke peers out into military peers and civilian peers, and military leaders influence service members' mental health. And again, we looked specifically at anxiety, depression, and PTSD. So for those of you who like pictures, here's a visual of what we were doing. So, you know, we wanted, obviously, we first looked at whether social support had a direct impact on mental health, and then we looked at whether dyadic functioning mediated the relationship, I'm sorry. The data were collected between October and November of 2013. Again, this is part of a larger study that focused on sexual dysfunction or sexual functioning problems among young military populations. Recruitment was online and through social media and existing military networks. Again, this is through the Center for Innovation on Research in Veterans and Military Families, who has a very wide network nationally, both at the battalion level and kind of through service organizations. Survey took about 30 minutes, and there was the final sample size was 321 dyads. So, two pairs. So we looked at the service members' reports for this analysis. General, they're about 30 years old. Most were married. So you had to be in a partner relationship to be in the study, but you didn't have to be legally married. That wasn't a requirement. You can see the ethnic breakdown, and you can also see the breakdown by branch, with Army representing the a substantial proportion of the individuals who were in the study. Just a couple of things about the measures. For depression, we used the PHQ-9. We used the GAD-7 for anxiety, and the PCLM, which is the military PTSD checklist for PTSD. And they all, in this population, had very good psychometrics. A couple other measures for social support. So the multidimensional scale of perceived social support is used widely by the VA. And we used all of the sections that are included, and we modified it to include one for military peers and one for military leaders. So we added two subsections, which held up just fine. We used the dyadic adjustment scale, the DAS, to look at dyadic functioning, and then our controls are listed there below. So what did we find? There were positive direct effects between social support and dyadic functioning for all sources of support. So the direct path was positive across the board. Whether you're military related or not, social support from anybody was associated with better mental health outcomes. So here, for those of you who like the charts, everything that's in yellow was significant. What you see changes a little bit between the slides. You can see that family support mattered across the board. Military peers had less, everything was direct in a bivariate level. Other things mattered along the way. When we had the multivariate analyses, some of it mattered, some of it got washed out. I'm going to talk about this. About the pictures. Here's the second one. So we looked at, the first one is for depression. I'm sorry. Second one is for PTSD. And the third one was for anxiety. So we ran all the models three times with a different mental health outcome for each model. So what were the highlights? Across all types of networks, greater social support was significantly associated with better dyadic functioning that I said before. However, in mediation models, only when social support was from a non-military connected source did it matter. So the relationship was only mediated when if you had support from someone that was not military connected, that improved your dyadic functioning, which in turn improved your mental health. That it wasn't the case for folks that were military connected, when the support was from someone military connected. There were a lot of reasons why this might or may not be true. We're not 100% sure, but it may be that while social support from military and civilians are very similar, so the type of support received might be the same, that that when it comes from a military-connected source, it may not be robust enough to influence mental health, or the type of support received from military-connected supports persons is better for other stressors, reducing other stressors like employment-related concerns. So a couple things, the things that we want to take away or we think are implications. Again, this is a small study, so we should think of it as very preliminary. But I think it's important to consider how different network members may influence mental health of service members. So oftentimes when we think of social support, we lump everybody together. We just think any type of social support matters. And you're not wrong from a bivariate level, right? Any type of support does matter. However, when you're drilling down into support for certain types of issues, particularly if you're looking at interpersonal or familial relationships, then it does seem to matter where that support is coming from. So as a practitioner, kind of understanding that it's not just having support as a whole, but where that support comes from that may be supportive or less supportive of the outcome that you're looking to change. So I think a strategy is really to make sure that people have robust networks. So that it's not just a few people from one source, but rather that we have a few people from lots of different sources that will help kind of create a wraparound approach so that that support serves for different issues for that individual. We think that interventions targeting reductions will be most effective when we think about relationships at multiple levels. And so if we think back to our old Bronfenbrenner, you know, really thinking about the person not just within their, not the individual or not just the individual within their family context, but understanding the community and larger context that might be impacting and maybe influencing social support, and maybe ways in which people can be accessing more support that they're either not dialed into or not comfortable connecting into. And that again, the community level interventions are going to become really important to increase positive networks and strengthen the connections. Because we know that if we bolster that support, then in turn we're going to influence positive well-being. So that is what I am presenting today. I don't know if anybody had any questions or thoughts or concerns. Yeah. So was it a requirement to have a diagnosis to get in? No. So what it was is the 312 service members filled this out, and about 30% met clinical cut points. Yeah, so the directionality becomes a challenge. A couple issues. One is that any of us could have adverse childhood experiences that put us already at a start point that's going to challenge making you ever find that space that is the before. Sometimes, as we, you know, if you think about young folks in the military and you think about mental illness, the timing of things is a little wonky, right? Because we know that a lot of things kind of pop up in early mid-20s. So timing is always going to be complicated. There is some work that has tried to look at people pre-deployment and then post-deployment. However, you really have to catch people very early pre-deployment, because when they know they're going to be deployed, they're more anxious. So I appreciate your point, but I don't know when it is that you find folks, unless you screened everybody on the way in. And then, you know, but then I think that that could create all sorts of other barriers that the government's not going to want to deal with. This is probably recorded. I should be more thoughtful about what I'm saying. I think that it's always a dilemma. So, you know, in the best case scenario, you catch people before they've ever been deployed. But we know even if you're deployed to a non-combat zone that it's just the experience of being separated and the adjustment to return to the family that can create some of the stressors. And that social isolation from deployment can influence it as well. That's it. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you so much for your time.